Welcome to this new detailed edition of the BayPay Forum Blockchain News. My name is Cindy and today is March 18, 2020. This edition is brought to you by PayCademy, the first business academy to learn payments in fintech. If you have some news in payments and fintech, send it to us at press@baypayforum.com and we will do our best to include your news. In this edition, we will talk about Toyota reveals blockchain lab exploring auto industry applications. Canadians get U.S. jail time for stealing 23 Bitcoin in Twitter scam. Regulated exchange launches in U.S. with crypto-backed Visa card offering. Argentina's gas regulator greenlights industry blockchain built with RSK Tech. Canada's financial crimes watchdog gets ready for FATF compliance. Caitlin Long's Wyoming crypto bank announces C-suite, including Bitcoin Core Dev. BitGo allows customers to extend crypto insurance cover over $100 million. Wave Financial to tokenize $20 million worth of bourbon for new whiskey fund. Bitcoin faces another down day as equities reject stimulus efforts. Banks have to embrace distributed ledger tech, even if it kills them. Tezos co-founder turns to gaming with Hearthstone competitor. Now let's get started. Toyota reveals blockchain lab exploring auto industry applications. Toyota has said declared its deeper aspirations for blockchain technology within the automotive industry, recently announcing it would be exploring opportunities from research it began in early 2019. Toyota Motor Corporation, Toyota, and Toyota Financial Services Corporation revealed a previously launched cross-group virtual organization known as Toyota Blockchain Lab on March 16, announcing the group had been operational since April 2019 alongside four other Toyota Group subsidiaries. The group is hoping to better understand the applications of blockchain within the auto industry. Blockchain is expected to be a fundamental technology that supports connecting people and businesses more openly, in a manner that provides safety and security, Toyota stated in its press release. Toyota will be exploring further possible uses for blockchain technology in a few key areas, including supply chain management and mobility, to create future value by accumulating technical knowledge and promoting solutions for applications in business, declaring that the timing was necessary. The move forms part of its continual venture into blockchain tech, aiming to position itself as a leader in mobility by creating a platform that is deeply embedded with the Internet of Things (IoT) technologies and software while increasing security along particular supply chains. With features such as highly tamper-resistant and fault-resistant, blockchain technology can realize secure data sharing between various parties by improving the reliability of the information, the company said. Canadians get U.S. jail time for stealing 23 Bitcoin in Twitter scam. Two Canadian nationals have been sentenced to 2 years in a U.S. jail for stealing Bitcoin from an Oregon resident through a Twitter scam. Karanjit Singh Kotkar and Jagroop Singh Kotkar, both from Surrey, British Columbia, were sentenced on March 17 to 24 months in federal prison with 3 years supervised release for conspiring to commit wire fraud and money laundering involving Bitcoin, BTC. According to a U.S. Department of Justice Attorney's Office press release Tuesday, a probe by the Federal Bureau of Investigation found the defendants sought to trick victims into thinking they were discussing customer service matters with representatives from Hong Kong-based crypto exchange HitBTC. In October 2017, the defendants used a Twitter account with the handle at HITBTC Assist to pose as HitBTC staff to manipulate one victim into handing over 23.2 BTC worth $118,000 at today's prices from a HitBTC wallet to Karanjit Kotkar's wallet on the Kraken exchange. The Kotkars also convinced the Oregon resident to hand over information that could be used to compromise the victim's accounts, including email as well as exchange account details. Within days of the theft, the Kotkars split the Bitcoin proceeds and proceeded to spend the liquidated cryptocurrency on a lavish lifestyle involving luxury cars and casinos. On December 16, 2019, the Kotkars pleaded guilty to the charges and were ordered to pay $142,349 in prepayment restitution during a change of plea hearing. A further $42,162 was awarded at sentencing, bringing the total figure to $184,511. Regulated exchange launches in U.S. with crypto-backed Visa card offering. A FinCEN-registered crypto exchange has launched with its own debit card that allows holders to pay for goods and services with digital assets. Utah-based CoinZoom announced Wednesday it would begin onboarding new institutional and retail clients, and will offer a Visa payment card that instantly converts cryptocurrencies into U.S. dollars. As a registered money service business with FinCEN in most U.S. states and territories, CoinZoom has to comply with local regulations, including those concerning consumer protection and Know Your Customer (KYC) requirements. The exchange is also licensed as a money transmitter in the U.S., as well as a digital currency exchange in Australia. CoinZoom supports most prominent cryptocurrencies, such as Bitcoin, BC, or Ether, ETH, in pairs with the US dollar, providing a fiat gateway into the asset class. The platform also includes a staking facility for selected proof-of-stake (PoS) coins, which provide rewards for holders. The exchange, which already has a trading app available for Apple iOS devices, can also be used as a remittance solution, according to CoinZoom founder and CEO Todd Crossland. CoinZoom is not only the first U.S. cryptocurrency exchange to provide a Visa card to its customers, but also offers industry-first features like ZoomMe, CoinZoom's free peer-to-peer crypto and fiat payment system, he said. Last year, U.S.-based cryptocurrency exchange Coinbase, which is also a registered MSB with FinCEN, released its own Visa-backed debit card, but only for users based in the UK and European Union. The exchange announced Tuesday it had newly integrated the Coinbase card with mobile payment provider Google Pay. Argentina's gas regulator greenlights industry blockchain built with RSK Tech. Argentina's national gas regulator has given Gasnor, a natural gas distributor for 2 million residents, approval to pilot a smart contract-based certification platform. Gasnet, a permissioned blockchain platform from IOV Labs and software builder Grupo Sabra, was launched Wednesday with approval from regulator Enargas, according to the firms involved. Running on an enterprise version of the RSK smart contract network, Gasnet is designed to secure and speed Argentina's chronically delayed gas certification processes. When you want to certify a new gas connection for a home or a company today, you need to send many documents, said Grupo Sabra co-founder Pedro Perota. From technician consumer agreements to certification paperwork and other documentation, all those things today in Argentina take a lot of time to process, Perota said. Up to 3 months, in fact. Not so under Gasnet. In the now operational consortium network, certification documents and transaction details zip between Gasnor and Enargas, each of whom run a network node. That increases visibility and smooths out otherwise crippling delays, Perota says, allowing technicians to ultimately bring consumers' gas services online faster. They are basically using the blockchain to certify the different steps, said IOV Labs CEO Diego Gutierrez. They're giving private keys to each one of the professionals involved in the process, so they do the certification work using this shared system. Certification is just the beginning, though. IOV Labs and Grupo Sabra say Gasnet's shared ecosystem can facilitate any number of services. Technicians' credentials, for example, are crucially important, given the dangerous nature of natural gas infrastructure. But what of an unscrupulous contractor who flees a checkered safety history in Buenos Aires and sets up shop instead in, say, the far smaller town of Salta in the country's north? Under the current system, his track record does not necessarily follow him north, but with GasNet it would. When you have a common database, everyone can see your track record, Pedro Perota said. GasNet has even bigger goals, too. It wants to become the common database for Argentina's entire gas distribution ecosystem, for all 9 regulated companies, Perota and Gutierrez said. Canada's financial crimes watchdog gets ready for FATF compliance. Canada's financial crimes watchdog is preparing to implement its broad new virtual currency oversight powers ahead of the Financial Action Task Force's June 2020 deadline. The Financial Transactions and Reports Analysis Centre of Canada, FINTRAC, will begin more strictly regulating virtual currency companies, transactions and activities following after new rules take effect on June 1, according to a departmental report released in early March. A major priority in the near term will be the implementation of new regulations arising from recent legislative change that gave FINTRAC new oversight of the virtual currency space, the agency said in the report. Passed as an amendment to Canada's criminal finance framework last June, the sweeping powers are expected to produce an enhanced AML/ATF regime in Canada, FINTRAC said in the report. FINTRAC is the Canadian counterpart to the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, FinCEN, in the U.S. Some of the highlights include a requirement that companies with $10,000 CAD in crypto activity register as a money services business, which comes with new regulations. Companies must also document sender and receiver's name, address, birth date, phone number and crypto type for crypto transactions over $1,000 CAD in some instances. More extensive documentation requirements apply to transactions of $10,000 CAD and above. Violations are largely classified as minor infractions under the amendments. The virtual currency amendments were Canada's response to FATF's blistering 2015-2016 assessment of its virtual currency AML and CFT frameworks as deficient. As a member of FATF, Canada is expected to meet certain thresholds. FINTRAC alluded to this expectation in its March report, saying the overall legislative and policy framework must serve Canada's interests while staying attuned to international expectations. Other countries, and exchanges, are also working fast to get in line before FATF's June deadline. Caitlin Long's Wyoming crypto bank announces C-suite, including Bitcoin Core Dev. One of the first prospective crypto banks in the United States is hiring its C-suite. Avanti Financial Group, the first firm to announce its application to be a special purpose depository institution in Wyoming, announced 5 new executive hires who will also be co-founders on Tuesday, including Bitcoin Core developer Brian Bishop and Figure Technologies' Zev Shimko. It was important to find people with experience in both crypto and traditional finance services because the two are so different, Caitlin Long, CEO of Avanti, told CoinDesk. It's hard to find an innovator in the core banking business, but we needed one because we'll be integrating crypto with core banking software. A SPDI bank looks like a regular custody bank without the ability to lend. SPDI banks regulated by the Wyoming Division of Banking can offer services for digital assets without the oversight of the risk-averse U.S. Federal Deposit Insurance Corp. Bishop is coming on as the firm's chief technology officer. In 2018, Bishop was a senior blockchain engineer and custody architect at Ledger X, the first commodity futures trading commission-regulated options exchange and clearinghouse for digital assets. He has also created Bitcoin Vaults, a pre-signed anti-theft recovery and drawback mechanism for Bitcoin. For everybody, crypto custody is a given core skill set, Long said. The fact that Brian has already done this at Ledger X puts him in a small group of people who have built secure crypto custody platforms that are proven in the marketplace and have survived daily attacks from adversaries. Community banking veteran Brittany Reddy will become the bank's chief of banking operations and chief financial officer. Reddy has held CEO, president, CTO, CCO and COO roles at multiple Wyoming banks. Shimko, who was a director at Figure, will become Avantis chief operating officer. Before Figure, Shimko was head of corporate development at Salt, a crypto-backed lender. Shimko began his career at Morgan Stanley in global capital markets. Former blockchain consulting CEO and Ledger X Chief Compliance Officer Chuck Thompson is joining the firm as Chief Legal Officer. Prior to that, he was in-house counsel at multiple capital markets firms, including Morgan Stanley. In February, Avanti announced it was teaming up with blockchain technology startup Blockstream to provide payment, custody, securities and commodities activities for institutional customers using digital assets. The bank plans to launch in early 2021, pending the approval of its SPDI charter by the Wyoming Division of Banking. The bank has 8 products in the pipeline that are not currently available in the U.S. market, including a custody solution for security tokens. BitGo allows customers to extend crypto insurance cover over $100 million. Customers of digital asset security specialist BitGo can now boost their insurance limit beyond $100 million to cover the loss or destruction of crypto stored in special vaults. BitGo came out with a Lloyds-backed cold storage insurance product in February 2019 and is now allowing customers to extend the $100 million worth of cover to suit their needs. It's a sign of the continued maturation of the crypto insurance sector. "We've had lots of demand from small to large firms," said Rodrigo Vicuña, BitGo's CFO. "There have been small exchanges looking for an extra $5 million or $10 million. We also have had requests for as high as a couple hundred million. It really just depends on the size of the client and how much financial backstop is right for them." A couple of years back, crypto custodians and large exchanges struggled to secure insurance against the loss of digital assets. But more recently, syndicates within Lloyd's of London's specialist insurance market have been taking on more risk and increasing capacity in the market. BitGo's crypto policy is covered by Lloyd's specie market, to use insurance industry parlance. This means insurance against theft or damage from vaults that typically hold cash, gold, fine art and so on. For crypto, this means a $100 million worth of cover, plus any excess added on, is to insure against the loss of digital assets from devices that are not and will never be connected to the internet. It covers loss from insider theft and if a third party gains physical access to storage media and cryptographic keys. BitGo announced the first customer for its new policy as Hong Kong-based exchange Crypto.com. Chris Mershalek, co-founder and CEO of Crypto.com, said in a statement, "BitGo carries a robust insurance program, elevating the scope of protection for our digital assets in their custody and providing further assurance to our customers that their funds are safe and protected." BitGo's excess policy offering is arranged through insurance broker Woodruff Sawyer & Co., in partnership with London's Paragon Brokers. As well as expanding its cold storage cover, BitGo also gives customers the option to add some hot wallet cover, thanks to a relationship with UK-based CoinCover, which recently announced it was backed by Lloyd's. CoinCover offers a crime policy covering third-party hacks, by far the most common means by which crypto is stolen. BitGo had previously teamed with Digital Asset Insurance, DAI, which later changed its name to CoinCover. The partnership meant BitGo business clients could purchase theft insurance and a key recovery service. "Anybody with a BitGo wallet could get hot wallet coverage with us," said David Yanchuski, CoinCover's CEO. Yanchuski said Lloyd's offers the policy on a case-by-case basis. "In terms of the typical limits to what is available for hot wallet cover, it's in the millions, possibly tens of millions," he said. "When we came out with that announcement back in 2019 saying you can now have optional hot wallet insurance up to your limit, the reason we designed that program was so BitGo would provide the initial protection," said BitGo's Vicuña. "Then, on top of that, clients each have their unique needs." Wave Financial to tokenize $20 million worth of bourbon for new whiskey fund. Digital asset manager Wave Financial is tokenizing a whole year's production of Kentucky bourbon so global investors can gain exposure to the growing U.S. whiskey market. Wave announced Wednesday it had finalized an agreement with the Danville, Kentucky-based Wilderness Trail Distillery to tokenize between 10,000 and 20,000 barrels of bourbon whiskey, worth up to $20 million, that will be made publicly available through a specialized digital asset fund. Known as the Wave Kentucky Whiskey 2020 Digital Fund, investors will be able to purchase asset-backed tokens linked to an inventory of whiskey barreled this year. Stored and maintained by the Wilderness Trail Distillery, Wave estimates the fund will represent as many as 4 million bottles of bourbon. The U.S. whiskey market has experienced something of a renaissance, becoming the most exported U.S. spirit in 2018. Over the past 10 years, domestic production capacity has repeatedly expanded year on year in order to meet demand. By tokenizing it, Wave says investors can gain exposure to bourbon's value appreciation and can also share some of the proceeds from when the whiskey is sold wholesale to merchants, 3 years after the whiskey is first distilled and tokens issued to investors. Wave's president and manager of the new whiskey fund, Benjamin Tsai, said in an announcement the fund gave investors a rare opportunity to access this unique asset class traditionally unavailable due to high upfront costs and purchase minimums, low liquidity, scarcity of production capacity, and technical know-how. Unlike many other consumable goods, which perish and lose value over time, whiskey does the opposite. The older the whiskey, the more valuable it becomes. This is due to whiskey's natural aging process. Once distilled, the spirit is stored in a barrel so ingredients continue to mix and the water either evaporates or soaks into the wooden barrel, improving the whiskey's flavor and making it more valuable. Specifically with the bourbon Wave selected, markup can increase from $1,000 per barrel when first distilled to as much as $4,000 5 years down the line. Tsai told CoinDesk that a fund administrator and auditor will calculate the value of the barrels on a quarterly basis, which will be presented a regular inventory report and will provide investors with a benchmark price for their tokens. Users will be able to trade their tokens at whatever price they wish. Wave is also in discussions with some security token exchanges to develop an official secondary market infrastructure to facilitate better trading in the whiskey-backed tokens. The new tokens have created something of a buzz among blockchain protocols. Some representatives have approached Wave asking whether they would consider launching on their platform. "We're keeping our eyes open on the protocols we could use for this," Tsai said, adding that the company was using Vertilo, a Tezos-partnered developer house, to create the token. A Wave spokesperson added that the token was available for accredited investors from all around the world, with a first close at the end of March, and a second at the end of June. A final close is expected to take place in September. Token issuance will take place a year after the sale, to comply with the SEC's one-year lockup requirement. Bitcoin faces another down day as equities reject stimulus efforts. Bitcoin, BTC, is again feeling the pull of gravity as investors offload risk in traditional markets despite the massive U.S. stimulus package this week. The top cryptocurrency by market value is currently trading near $5,050, having failed to establish a strong foothold above $5,500 late Tuesday, according to CoinDesk's Bitcoin Price Index. Prices were better bid 24 hours ago when global equities were flashing green. Sentiment, however, soured during Wednesday's Asian trading hours and futures tied to the S&P 500 fell by 5%, triggering a limit down the maximum percentage decline possible in one trading day. Asian equities also put in a weak performance, providing negative cues to the major European equity indices, which are currently down at least 3%. Global equities markets continue to reject stimulus efforts put forward by the U.S., with the S&P 500 recording its largest one-day drop on Monday since 1987, said Matthew Dibb, co-founder and COO of Stack, a provider of cryptocurrency trackers and index funds. See also, why Bitcoin is the only truly free market, feat. Dan Tapiero, the U.S. Federal Reserve delivered an emergency rate cut of 100 basis points early Monday and announced new quantitative easing in the form of at least $700 billion in asset purchases. Further, the Trump administration said Tuesday it's planning to send checks directly to U.S. citizens as part of a $1 trillion stimulus program. Even so, the stock markets are flashing red, which likely indicates investors are worried that monetary easing will not spur economic activity. After all, the threat to global supply and demand is not being caused by institutional systemic failures but by measures related to the growing coronavirus pandemic. As a result, a sustainable price recovery in both stocks and Bitcoin may remain elusive until there is a stabilization in the coronavirus infection curve. However, if the impact of the coronavirus outbreak intensifies beyond the global lockdown we are already experiencing, it could spark a further run for cash, Simon Peters, analyst and crypto asset expert at multi-asset investment platform eToro, told CoinDesk. Should that happen, investors may again look to Bitcoin as a source of liquidity, leading to another wave of selling. Bitcoin is currently consolidating, showing indecision in the marketplace, said Peters. That seems to be the case as the cryptocurrency is stuck in a triangle pattern on an intraday chart. Bitcoin has carved out an ascending triangle that comprises two trend lines, a horizontal line connecting price resistance and a rising trend line joining higher lows. A four-hour close above the upper edge of the triangle, currently at $5,945, would open confirm an ascending breakout and open the doors for $6,425 December low. However, if the lower end of the triangle at $4,865 is breached, more sellers may join the market, yielding a retest of recent lows under $4,000. The 14-day relative strength index is signaling oversold conditions with a below 30 reading, while the MACD histogram is producing higher lows below the zero line, a sign of weakening bearish momentum. A triangle breakout on the 4-hour chart, if confirmed, could be followed by a quick rally to $6,000. Banks have to embrace distributed ledger tech, even if it kills them. Chuck Fried is the president and CEO of TXMQ, a technology consulting and integration company specializing in the financial services industry. He has more than 30 years of experience helping banks set up, manage, transform and evolve their IT systems to improve customer service and reduce the risk of fraud and data loss. As someone who spends a large amount of time inside IT departments of major banks, I like to tell people two things. The first is that some of the brightest and cleverest people I've ever met work in bank technology groups. The second is that many banks have facilitated a culture of complacency when it comes to technological transformation. I find this attitude often presents itself as fear, more specifically, fear of change. It's understandable, over time a leading market position, steady successes, and routine, if not staggering, annual growth starts to make one feel immune from competition. You begin to become complacent. And what is complacency really but fear of change? Nowhere is this complacency more evident than in the way the banking industry is looking at distributed ledger technology, DLT or blockchain. I see DLT treated as anything from a passing fancy to an unwelcome distraction by banking IT leaders. In my experience, these attitudes are the result of a lack of information about the tech. To that end, here's what I tell bank leaders about blockchain and DLT. The power of entropy. For decades, banks operated in virtual vacuums. Few external pressures could touch them. Customers made deposits and took out loans. The delta between savings rates and loan rates was the bank's operating profits. That business model created tremendous wealth for banks in the US and around the world. The system all worked perfectly until it didn't. Throughout banking history, what little innovation that has occurred has proceeded at a glacial pace, typically being driven by what we would today call fintechs. New technologies came primarily in the form of point solutions built by outside firms. Check imaging, for instance, didn't originate in bank in-house technology groups, but rather at external firms that were later absorbed by banks. In short, most of the tech we see, use and expect from our banks was built somewhere else, and later acquired by banks. Now though, banks are increasingly threatened by the rise of competitors like alternative banks and the modern fintech economy. These businesses come primarily out of Silicon Valley startup culture, which emphasizes disruption, rather than continuity with established business models. With either innovative tech, mobile banking, or innovative business models, e.g., online lending marketplaces, or both, they are gobbling up whole customers' bases that have been traditionally held by the big banks. Take mortgages, for instance, the top five U.S. banks accounted for just 21% of mortgage originations in 2019, compared to half of all mortgages in 2011. Beyond innovophobia, these developments are forcing banks to confront their fear of change in a way they haven't had to previously. The result is that many are forcing themselves to innovate faster than they ever have before. That's why when I work with banking clients, I am constantly bringing up DLT as one of a number of new technologies to explore. It should be taken as gospel that banks have an inherent fear of innovation, but even within that mindset, DLT occupies a uniquely anxious space. Technology may be all ones and zeros, but there's something about digital ledgers that makes bank IT teams' heads spin. What I tell these skeptics is that while they've been complacent and resting on their laurels, blockchain POCs have been quietly winning the day. The technology works. Works amazingly well for the right use cases. Blockchain startups, pursuing applications from cross-border payments to supply chain management to digital identity management, are now too numerous to name. Major economists have in recent years embraced blockchain as part of a solution to address various global finance challenges. The upshot, if your banking institution isn't already putting R&D work into blockchain solutions, then you're already behind. I've found that clients don't really know what to do with DLT. They don't understand the right use cases, and so often suggest ideas that sound really interesting, but aren't well suited to the technology. Educating banks on what DLT can do and what it cannot is thus crucial. Banking on blockchain, it bears noting that some of the most interesting and potentially game-changing use cases are those that present the greatest existential threat to banks. Banks are middle people. Intermediaries. Customers deposit, banks lend. What if we didn't need this service, and could eliminate this need for the bank as a third party to transact? What if we could interact directly using DLT, without a need for a financial services intermediary at all? This is the true promise of blockchain. Transactionality in a trustless world. This is where fintechs play, and banks fear to tread. Thus, paradoxically, DLT is both a threat and an opportunity for banks. The threat as laid out above is that banks' own resistance to change will lead to them watching the opportunity of DLT pass them by because DLT is going to transform the economy, with or without their leadership. If banks want to secure their futures, it is vital that they confront their fear of change and embrace innovation in all its disruptive splendor. That's the opportunity in front of them now. Tezos co-founder turns to gaming with Hearthstone competitor. Digital card games like Hearthstone are fun, but getting the cards needed to play is not. That's a problem Coz, a company launched by Tezos co-founder Kathleen Brightman, aims to solve with its new game, Emergence. The new title, whose alpha version opens up to a select few in early April, comes as the market for online card games nears $2 billion in size and coronavirus-related shutdowns drive gamers indoors. Coasey's innovation, let people easily acquire and swap the cards they actually want. Providing optionality makes people feel better and also it promotes experimentation, which is something that seems to have been lost in the transition to digital, Brightman told CoinDesk in an interview. In collectible card games, there are two giants. The original, analog version, Magic: The Gathering, which is arguably the most successful brand in the Hasbro portfolio, and the digital Hearthstone, which brings in an estimated $400 million for its owner, Blizzard Entertainment. But both have issues with how cards get distributed. For those who have never played Magic, cards are distributed in physical packs, which each have a distribution of cards of different rarities. Generally speaking, only one or two cards per pack are worth holding. Anyone who plays knows they will inevitably end up with loads of unwanted duplicates. There's a strong secondary market for Magic cards, but the game's maker has largely pretended it doesn't exist. Hearthstone is more complicated. Players get free cards. They can buy packs. They can also trade in their cards to get other cards, sort of, but they lose a lot of value when they do that. So, Hearthstone has a built-in secondary market, but it's very extractive. For Coz co-founder Zvi Moshewitz, who is also a 2007 inductee to Magic Hall of Fame, both distribution approaches leave a lot to be desired. Emergence will take a radically simple approach, let people buy the cards they want. Brian David Marshall, a third co-founder, said Coz has an economic model for doing a collectible card game on the blockchain that captures a lot of what makes physical card games great. Cards as tokens. CoS will be the primary and secondary marketplace all in one. Like Bitcoin on Square's Cash App, CoS will be the seller and the buyer for emergence cards, essentially acting as a market maker. The company is using bonding curves, much like Ethereum's token swapping platform Uniswap, to distribute the cards. Cards will have a fixed supply and their prices will swing with demand, determined by an algorithm. New cards will come out and be sold on the site at a low price. Each card sold will make the next card sold just a little pricier, but each card sold back to CoS will make the next card sold a little cheaper. When the market for a given card is saturated, it will be cheap. As the card gets scarce, it will go way up in price. Cards can be sold back to the company at something like 95% of their value. One of the things we wanted to take advantage of with this blockchain technology is giving people the opportunity to feel really smart, David Marshall said. So, for example, there could be a card that looks just okay to most players, but any longtime player of Magic knows that the value of cards can change swiftly as the community learns the game. If some player built a deck that did great things with that card, word would get around and it would go up in value fast. So in this case, feeling smart would also mean the option to sell a card back to CoS's market for a nice gain. Users can trade directly, of course, this is crypto, and people will be able to set up exchanges for the cards as well. But the founders hope the user experience of buying and selling most cards through CoS will be so good that players will primarily rely on their markets. That said, the founders were very clear that the company will not resist users trading cards however they wish. Once they buy them, they are theirs to use however they wish. The whole project is being built on Tezos, so all trades will be made in the blockchain's native cryptocurrency, XTZ, but the company is also working to hide this behind fiat rails for users who don't care about the crypto aspect. Going digital also allows the company to spin up interesting mechanics. For example, one of the most popular forms of Magic is draft, where everyone buys three packs but players get some choice about what cards they keep. Emergence plans a phantom draft, where players will have a similar experience but can then choose whether they want to buy cards they played with at the end of the game or not. Blockchain's perks. Some cards will become more unique with use, which is where there might be opportunities for exchanges in uniquely blockchain-y circumstances. For example, Magic cards cannot keep track of games the cards have played. Digital cards can. So it all depends on how popular the games get, but if the fandom gets big enough, serious fans might care about somewhat intangible qualities of the game that can be logged and proven on the blockchain, even if they don't impact gameplay. Our cards have memory, Moshewitz said. That means a card could have a record showing that it played in the winning deck at a major tournament. An artist or player could also digitally sign someone's card, proving that the collector has met someone from the digital experience. CoS's bonding curve-governed pools probably won't be good at illuminating the card's memory, which could create an opportunity for entrepreneurs to create a marketplace for cards with unique provenances. If the fanbase gets large enough, that is. However, one key question anyone from centralized gaming will wonder is this: will the company mess with supply? For example, if the game suddenly spikes in popularity and supply gets tight, will they wreck card values by quickly pumping up supply? The CoS co-founders were very clear on this: no. Cards will come out with fixed supplies and they will stick to it, which could be painful one day for players who really want something but also great for people who got that card early. The view of the CoS team was that it had to be that way. This is crypto, Moshewitz said. Enough about the cards. What about the game? Right, the game. Of course, the plan for CoS works best if its first game comes out strong. Emergence is still in alpha, but basically it's a game of pitting super beings against super beings. The intellectual property is from an analog deck builder created by David Marshall called Emergence Genesis. Players act as the team leader of a gang of super beings who are slowly coming out and attempting to attack the other player. To attack, they first have to get past their opponent's own team of super beings. The games are divided into different factions, powered by different sorts of resources. The way you build your resources to play cards is by playing cards, David Marshall said. There are some elements of the game where the COS team believes they've added innovations to the form, but these don't hinge on the game's usage of blockchain technology. I think the needle that Zvi and Brian are trying to thread, Brightman explained, is making a game that has a lot of strategic depth that can also be enjoyed by novices. There's also the ability to put cards on the field without using them immediately. That is, removing them from your hand but waiting for the right time to activate them. To start, there will be a bunch of tutorials. The company will release a base set of free cards everyone can start with, in a format called Free Card Constructed. Then other cards will come out each week that players can buy. This means there will be new cards all the time. It also means when the game gets out of balance in some way, COS can quickly print new cards that deal with it. Additionally, the company will eventually release a software development kit (SDK) that would even allow users to create experiences for using their cards, new formats, new rules, new limitations. Magic cards have a basic game attached to them, but players have invented lots of new games based on the cards. A player with some coding skill could do the same eventually with Emergence. And if blockchains start communicating effectively, Emergence could even evolve beyond Tezos. There is, after all, a full metaverse for games out there. This concludes our edition for today. We want to thank again PayCademy, the first business school to learn payments and fintech, for their support. You can find more information on their website at paycademy.com. We hope you enjoyed it and see you tomorrow for our next edition.